Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by Anthony Buongiorno.
Hello, everyone. I'm back.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Sounds sarcastic and smug.
I'm really great. It was genuine.
I don't believe a goddamn word you say.
I'm excited for today, whenever you're listening to this, I'm excited for the episode.
What's our episode about, Anthony?
Well, our episode is about shows that you couldn't or shouldn't binge watch.
Yes.
I put that in my notes, shouldn't slash couldn't.
Interesting.
Because I don't want to say couldn't. I'm not saying I haven't.
Right.
But maybe you shouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple of my list that I binged and got a little bit of a headache. And it was like, I should not have binged this.
Exactly. Exactly. There are actually most of the ones on my list are ones that I had binged and learned my lesson.
I think binging, and if you don't know what binging is, what century are you living in? But binge watching... For if you don't know, is the practice of watching a television series one episode after the other after the other after the other.
Marathon watching.
Right, right. It's what we used to call marathon. And remember on like TV, sometimes on basic cable, they would do like
Nick at Night Block Party Summer.
Right, or like Beavis and Butthead would have like Buttheadathon or something. I forget what MTV called it, but it was always the best day ever. It'd be like five Beavis and Buttheads
you
in
just
a row.
You just activated a memory that I had not accessed in years.
Yeah, because I was the one who was probably like, oh my God, there's a Beavis and Butthead marathon
on. We still have the Twilight Zone every New Year's Eve and
yes,
Honeymooners, but I don't know. Do we still have every Simpsons ever marathon?
I think not in the last year. I think now that they are all on Disney Plus, it's no longer shown on TV.
I feel like marathons used to be a bigger thing in the 90s than they are now.
Well, I think the main difference is now we program it, right? The prevalence is for streaming services. So, people binge. There's like, before we get into our lists, I've just been thinking all week about the idea of binging. And there's so many interesting things that sort of stick out to me. One is that like people keep asking me, have I watched the new Zack Snyder version of Justice League, which I don't like Zack Snyder, so I'm not going to watch it. But it's like 4 hours and I'm always like, hell no, I'm not going to watch it. Or if you're like, oh, do you want to watch, you want to watch The Godfather? Like, you know how many times Jen... For a while, Jen was like, we should watch every Godfather. And she'd be like, you want to watch The Godfather Part 1? And I'd be like, I don't have 7 hours right now. But would easily like watch 7 hours of 7 Gilmore Girls.
Right.
So it's so weird that your brain will be like, no, I can't take on a big, huge project. But in little bites, I can totally do it.
Yeah, I was thinking about this too, because I was thinking about what I do while I binge, like behaviors, and it made me think myself about what makes a show bingeable or not bingeable, and I kind of came to the conclusion that a show is bingeable when you can sort of be doing other things while you're watching it, and maybe that's just me.
Even if it's a first run for you?
I don't know. That's a good question.
It's like something you've done before, like me and Jen just started Community. I mean, I guess you could say the third time for me, first when it was broadcast. Then a few years ago, I did it. I just did the binge. And this is my third time. It's her first time. So for me, I don't need to. I mean, I'm still watching it, but I don't need to like be glued to it. I also know exactly what's going to happen. I find with things like that in my head, it's more a matter of testing my memory. Like, oh yeah, that's in season one episode. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I forgot that Pierce leaves this early, or shit like that. Or you know, stuff like that. I forgot Bretta is still smart in season one.
See, what are your binging habits? Because I'm not the type of person that will binge an entire season in one sitting. Like, I'm thinking about recent shows that came out that shows now, they very often come out the whole season at once.
Yeah.
And like even ones that I really like Never Have I Ever. I think I broke that up into like two or three sittings.
Never Have I Ever, me and Jen watched that in one evening.
See, I still don't do that.
I love doing that, but the problem with doing that is I don't retain it. It's like reading a book that I like and then kind of move on. So when season two comes,
you have to like rewatch season one.
I have to either rewatch season one or kind of go into season two, or sometimes you could go on YouTube and somebody has made like a recap of the first season.
I think the last show that I like really binged, where like I stayed up all night watching the whole season straight, was probably the first season of Glow.
Yeah. In general, I mean, I don't want to get into my list just yet, but in general, hour longs are harder to binge than
for sure. Half hour. Yes.
Half hour comedies.
It's like candy.
Yeah, it's very easy to binge, especially if they're like not very complex.
Right.
Like, I've watched, a couple years ago, I binged seven seasons of The Goldbergs, and every episode of that show is basically the exact same thing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say The Golden Girls.
No,
I was disappointed when I heard the second part of that word.
Sorry.
Goldbergs is an underrated show.
I think Goldbergs is a great show. I'm not putting it down. It doesn't have the no, you must watch it.
You've always been a champion of the Goldbergs.
From the beginning. It doesn't have the you have to pay attention to it like Arrested Development or even Community. Like Community, like it rewards you for really paying attention to things because things will repeat and stuff like that. Whereas, you know, Goldbergs doesn't do that. It's much more of a traditional, like, network show.
Yeah. I know we're not getting into our list yet, but I did want to say that. What's funny is I listened to your last episode, your fights episode with you and Janine, and you were talking about how you tried to avoid looking at other people's lists.
Yeah.
So I did the same thing. So I put my list together, and then I looked to see what was out there on the internet as like shows you shouldn't binge. And what's funny is some of my shows that I have on mine are very like binge recommended, which is
interesting. I did the exact same thing as you, and I could say at least one on my list was also on a don't binge list.
One of mine was on a don't binge list, but then one of mine oddly was named in an article as they called it like the epitome of binge-worthy TV.
Interesting.
And I was like, that's so interesting because it was the first one that I thought of as one that you shouldn't binge.
Wow. That's
I guess it just speaks to personal taste.
I'm fascinated to see what it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, I think there should almost be a distinction between older shows made before the digital streaming revolution and now, because now some shows are made like multi-chapter films, you know, and different streaming services have different methodology of publication. Like Netflix will always give you everything, like for Stranger Things, which I think is maybe one of the first really like popular bingeable shows. They give you every episode. When it's a new Stranger Things season, it's all out. Whereas like Hulu, with their series, they give it to you one a week.
Yeah, Stranger Things, and the ones where they give it to you all at once are interesting because they're really flash in the pan. Like when Stranger Things drops a season, it's number one trending on Twitter that whole weekend. Everybody's talking about it for 3 days.
Right.
And then it drops off for a year.
Right.
It's really weird. The model is really weird.
Right. It gives people the instant gratification, but I think there's something to be said with the other model. Like Mandalorian came out week by week, and I think you wouldn't have had like the growing Baby Yoda fascination in season one if it had all come out. There would have been like a meme of Baby Yoda for like a weekend, and then we all would have moved on.
Totally agree. And you still haven't.
No, I've not. Because they extended it.
Well, Disney's smart and savvy, and they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I agree. I think it's two different models. It's, you know, we're not saying one's better than the other, but it's definitely, there's definitely pros and cons, I guess, or benefits and drawbacks to both.
Yeah. And yeah,
I mean, you could always watch it however you want, but if you want to be in on the conversation, you got to watch it when it drops, because that's when most people talk about it,
when it's
something like Stranger Things or something that drops all at once.
Right. I recently did an episode of PCMC about My Hero Academia, the anime, and that's an interesting show because I would binge it a little every day. Like, I would, like, if I had a, I'd watch five, then I'd watch four, then I'd watch, and it's because that show is based on a comic, so it's made in arcs.
Okay.
So it's like, if I'm in an arc, and like, it ends on a cliffhanger, I'm like, well, I have to keep going until this arc is over, and it might be five episodes of that arc, of that narrative beat, and then it's over.
Yeah.
And it's not season-wide, it's just like, in a season, there'll be like three or four arcs.
Yeah.
So, like, that feels very natural to me.
Yeah, it's it speaks to what you said before about, you know, shows that came out before streaming. Yeah. And I guess, you know, in general, I do think that shows having a season-long arcs, at least comedies...
Yeah.
That didn't really start happening until relatively recently, I think.
Right. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Probably like HBO shows.
Yeah. Like, I'm thinking like Sex and the City. That was like late 90s, early 2000s. That was a big phenomenon. It was a half-hour comedy. Right. And it was single camera and had season-long arcs.
In Curb, too, like, every episode is singular, yet there's always a larger thing, like he's opening a restaurant,
yeah,
or, like, he's going through a divorce.
Yes.
He's doing The Producers.
Yes. Whenever we watch an episode of Curb, we'll always be like, oh, what season? Is that the producer season? Is that the New York season?
Right,
is that
exactly.
There's a theme for every season.
Right, right. But
is that the Leon season?
Yeah. What's the last thing you binged?
So I guess the last thing I binged straight through was Glow. I think the last thing that I binged in general, it's been a while, I feel like, to be totally honest with you.
I guess
Tiger King.
Ooh.
Although I was kind of late to that.
Remember Tiger King, folks?
Yeah. Tiger King is so closely associated with the beginning of COVID.
I know.
It's so weird. It's like a moment in
frozen
in ember or something. Amber.
Like, remember when we were all super into this fucking guy tried to murder somebody?
Yeah. I remember when people were on his side. Yeah, I've always been anti.
Yeah, I never was like a champion of him. Mm-hmm. I always was like, this guy's a fucking piece of shit. That whole show's about pieces of shit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I also binge meaning from beginning to end.
Yeah.
That. But there are other shows that I started binging, but sometimes for me the season breaks give me an out. So like I got into Blackish and I binged the first two seasons, and then after the second season I was like, let me take a break, and I still haven't returned yet. Not that it's, I just wanted a break. Right.
See, my problem is that I've said this a million times on the show, I don't have the best memory. So I'll binge
anybody does now.
Yeah, maybe it's right. Maybe I'm too hard on myself. But like the last thing I binged all the way through was Ginny and Georgia, and it ends on a cliffhanger, and I was so mad, and I wasn't mad because I wanted the gratification of the narrative. I was mad because I will want that gratification for a week, and then I'll forget about it, and then by the time the next season comes, I won't even remember or care.
Yeah.
And that's why I hate cliffhangers.
It's like you
just gave me no ending. Mm-hmm. You didn't hook me. You just gave me narrative blue balls, and you know, and they say, okay, so watch it again when the next season comes. It's like, no, because I'll be like, I watched that already.
I also I binged the first season of Black Monday, too, sometime during the pandemic. I don't know, memories from the pandemic are very fuzzy, but I definitely did binge watch. Like, I watched that all in, like, two nights.
Yeah.
Recently...
I think your life has a lot to do with it, and your work.
Yeah, for sure.
You have to be able to, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, there are shows that I think maybe I probably would binge more if I didn't, you know, have a life and a job. Like, sometimes it's like you can only watch two of something a night.
And sometimes that's better.
But I always would rather that than one. Like, one is not enough.
Right. You always want there to be another.
Right.
But then it's nice to be able to say, like, all right, I'm going to bed. I'll come back to this tomorrow.
I had two.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you're forced to do that, whether you want to or not, you end up appreciating
it
because it makes you thoughtful and it makes you remember and think about the last thing you consumed.
Right.
Do you ever give yourself a cliffhanger? Like, you know, like it's Thursday night, you got work tomorrow, but you know the weekend's coming and you're like, you know what, let me stop right now because I'm going to have a nice chunk of time Saturday morning and I'll give myself give myself the anticipation.
No, but I think,
okay.
I don't do that.
I do that all the time.
I was going to say though, I do feel like I do that with books sometimes.
Oh, for sure with books.
Yeah, I'm like, let me just close it now and go to bed.
For sure. I find like that will keep me reading a book faster. Mm-hmm. If I feel a closure, I can forget the book.
Yeah.
If I'm like, if I leave myself on pins and needles, it's like, I know I'm going to come back to that book as soon as I can.
Yeah, that's a good point.
All right, let's get into our lists.
Do you have them in any particular order?
No, I don't.
Okay.
How many do you have?
I have five.
I have five, but I just thought of a sixth one right now.
You scumbag.
You know what? Let me just
more than I do.
Let me just tell you the sixth one. Let me just tell you the one I just thought of to start us off.
Okay.
I just realized Unsolved Mysteries is unbingeable. Because because me and Jen watched season one of the new what?
Well, I'm in shock.
What?
You binge watched it?
Like, no,
you
we really didn't. Did it? No, we didn't do
it. Oh, I feel like that would wreck me mentally.
No. Well, here's the thing. You have to watch an episode, then you have to solve the crime with your partner who you've watched the show with.
Right.
And then when you've put the cold case to bed, you can then look at a new episode.
That makes sense. I just feel like it would really just bum me out.
Well, no, yeah. It's also too much exposition. That's the problem with binging documentaries, is at some point you're like, I'm sick of faces saying things at me.
I kind of felt that way. This is, I guess maybe this will be my six. It's not a TV show, but I binged Serial.
Yeah,
when it first came out, and I remember, like, by the middle of episode six, I was like, if I fucking hear Sarah Koenig speak in that cadence one more time.
That fucking oatmeal, fucking white lady. God damn it.
He said he never heard from her that day. Said he was in class. I was at the library.
She's the world's greatest detective. Don't you love when she'd be like, come on, man, that doesn't make any sense. It's like, all right, Batman, you're fucking great at this.
But yeah. That was intended to be listened to week to week.
Right.
But most people binged it.
But people binged it. Yeah. Exactly.
And everybody was like, well, I'm going to be the one to solve this crime.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that makes you, with things like that, true crime, everyone just thinks they're a detective. And it's just like, you know, and people don't realize how much they're being swayed by the editing style. You know, you think, like, you'll get to a point where you're like, oh my God, it's so obvious. And it's like, no, it's not obvious. Like, detectives aren't that stupid. Boop, boop.
Did you ever see, like, the SNL skit where they did it and it was about Santa Claus?
Yeah.
He said his name is Chris. He had a white beard. Loved children. It's so good.
Do you want to go?
Okay, so my all right, I guess I'll start from the bottom and work my way up.
All right.
Cuz my top one is one that I just find not bingeable.
I'll try to do that as well.
Okay, so I have I guess it's sort of like a genre more than a show, but the show is American Horror Story. But I put American Horror Story / Black Mirror.
Interesting. Black Mirror's on my list as well. But they're so different.
They are so different, but they both gave me Mean World Syndrome when I binged them.
Explain to the folks Mean World Syndrome.
So when I binged, I find them, this is the thing. This is like a shouldn't, because they are highly bingeable, especially like the early seasons of American Horror Story.
Right.
But I mainlined season one.
Yeah.
Followed by season two. And when I tell you that at one point, a darkness came over me, and I swear to God, I'm not exaggerating. And I was like, why do I just feel like scared and like gross and like really depressed and like just like I feel like I've entered into a darkness. And I Googled it and it said that if you are over, I found on the interwebs that there's this phenomenon where if you're overexposed to something really, really violent or really scary or whatever for too long, you can come down with these blues that they call Mean World Syndrome, which is just like you've just been overexposed to too much dark shit. And it gets in your head.
Right.
And so I needed a break.
Mean World Syndrome comes from the media theorist George Gerbner. And he studied violence in media. And what he found was watching violent media doesn't make you act violent. It just makes you think the world is more violent.
Yes.
It just makes you more afraid of violence. That's my problem with true crime. Like I know many people find true crime empowering. Especially female listeners of true crime, like the whole Stay Sexy, Don't Get Murdered, movement with My Favorite Murder.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm not mistaken, I think Janine said that she had to take a break from My Favorite Murder because she had been listening to it so much, she got some Mean World Syndrome.
Right. And it's like, if you're empowered, that's great. But also it's like, you are very statistically unlikely to get murdered. So like... Like, when you say stay sexy, don't get murdered, it puts in your head that you're going to get murdered out there. And it's like, probably not.
Yeah.
Well, get back to American Horror Story. That's a show, every season has such, and this is Ryan Murphy a little bit too, has such a cynical worldview.
Yeah.
The world is gross and bad.
Yes, especially seasons 1 and 2.
Yeah.
So I know back in the old days, pre-podcast, we wrote a column together about American Horror Story.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember we talked about like first wave and second wave American Horror Story.
Yeah, yeah.
Season 1 and 2, which are less campy, are really dark, like really super dark and graphic and scary. And like if you watch them, and they're hour longs, if you watch them straight through, like it got into my bones. I was this is dark.
Right. I think 2 especially
is
really, really, just the imagery and all that is very disturbing. Whereas a lot of 1 is domestic and stuff, but 2 for sure is super dark. Although it does get campy. Don't forget there's aliens.
It does get campy, but season two is like they throw everything at you. So it's like Nazis and witches and nuns and zombies and everything.
From that point on, I think the only way to watch it is to watch it and then fucking shit in your hand and then fucking rub shit in your eyes. Because that's how they fucking wrote the show.
Yeah. But season one, I feel like, is the one that, because maybe because season one is the tightest, like in the way it's written. It's really scary. Like, I remember just being like, oh man, what if that person's a ghost? People, like the way people say when they listen to so much true crime, they'll be out in the street and they'll look around and be like, one of these people is a sociopath.
One of these people
is a murderer.
Right. Someone's a ghost. You're a ghost, aren't you? Sometimes I do this bit where Jen will be like, oh, look at this person's bag or whatever. I'm like, what person? I don't see a person.
You did that to me a lot when we were young, and you'd freak me out.
It's funny every time.
I remember one time for hours, you were like, I'm a robot. And I was like, no, you're not. And you're like, I am. And then you're like, prove that I'm not. And then I had an existential crisis. I was like 8.
Nothing like siblings, young siblings gaslighting each other for pure entertainment.
You're like, Mom and Dad built me.
I once tried to convince a friend who I later found out she had a crush on me that I wasn't real, that I was like a Tyler Durden that she had made up. I'd be like, I'm not real.
Wouldn't that have been so funny if, like, there was an extra scene at the end of Fight Club where he saw him out and he was like, wait a second. He's like, you actually are real.
He's like, all right, you got me. All right. Anyway, I guess I'll go with Black Mirror.
Well, I loved Black Mirror in there because, like, they are so different, but I guess maybe this will connect to yours. It's just very dark.
Yeah. Black Mirror is a different kind of anthology. It's the traditional anthology where every episode's a different story. See, the thing is, Twilight Zone is the king of that type of anthology, yet I feel it is bingeable.
Yeah.
It's classically bingeable.
It's not as graphic. Maybe that's why.
Maybe, but you see, Twilight Zone was often moralizing, for better or worse, whereas Black Mirror is less moralizing and more like big ideological premises.
Let me stop you for a second. Maybe if you watched Twilight Zone during the time when it reflected the anxieties of the time.
Maybe.
I mean, because a lot of Twilight Zone is like Cold War anxiety.
Yeah, right.
We don't worry about that anymore. Black Mirror is like current fear of technology. And yeah, so it feels more real.
No, you're
to
right.
To you, maybe.
Maybe at the time it would have been hard to binge. Because the binging, I don't know the history of when the Twilight Zone marathon started, but it was definitely much later.
Oh yeah.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, it's not just that it's a dark world. For me, Black Mirror is not just that it's a dark worldview. It's that it's very heady. You know, every episode is really tightly constructed. And I even gave up. I watched the first 2 seasons and I haven't watched, I think they did 2 or 3 more. And I know it's a good show. I just haven't gone back. And sometimes I'm like, why don't I just watch an episode at a time? But I haven't. And maybe I did. Maybe, you know, I think sometimes it's like when you eat a food and then you get sick and you're like, I don't want to eat that food for a while.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like maybe I was in a bad place when I binged the first 2 seasons of Black Mirror. Because I binged them back to back.
Mm-hmm.
And now I just like, I don't want to go into that headspace.
Yeah, similar. Yeah. To what I was saying, but I definitely agree. It's a lot. I don't watch Black Mirror like that, and I never have because of that. Like, I like to take them one. I tend to watch Black Mirror like piecemeal. Like, I'll look up episodes that are well reviewed and watch those on their own.
Yeah,
I don't watch the season straight through, and I feel like it's better that way.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you have to think about it. This is not related, but is related as a simile or metaphor. I've been reading a lot of poetry, and you can read poetry very quickly, but also you can't.
I never do.
You should read every poem at least twice, and also you should like stop and chew on it a little bit.
That's like why I don't really ever know how to behave in art museums, because I feel like I'm like, okay, I saw this one, and it's just like too much. It's like, shouldn't each one of these paintings be appreciated for?
I don't know. For some reason, that doesn't happen to me. I have an intuitive interior clock where it's like, I've looked at it enough.
Okay.
But, you know, I think it also has to do, let me backtrack on what I said. If it's a volume of one author, like if it's all, you know, like Bukowski, I could read that. Or if it's all, what's her name? The one who's really popular now, Ruby.
Ruby Cower.
Yeah. I could read one of her books.
But don't you
but
find...
But if it's a collection of a bunch of different poets, it's like...
Oh, yeah.
It's just like your brain explodes because like this guy's using rhyming and this guy's free and this guy's... playing with, it's just like, is playing with form, and it's like my head is exploding.
Don't you feel though that even if that if you read one volume by one poet, and maybe it's meant to be read this way, like the way albums are meant to be listened to in one sitting, I guess, like you will, I feel like I'll read a few and then I'll flip back five pages and be like, I don't remember reading this and I read it 5 minutes ago, you know, like. But maybe you're supposed to walk away from it with just like big ideas.
Maybe. I don't know. Well, in the case of, is it Ruby Carr?
I always thought it was Ruby Cower, but I could be wrong.
In the case of her books, and I've only read, I think.
I've only read Milk and Honey.
Yeah, that's the one I read. I felt like it all felt like one thing. It all felt like she was reflecting on one idea.
But Bukowski is like famously like doesn't do a lot with language.
Right. It's very blunt.
Right. And so it just feels like with him, it's just almost like I felt like I'm reading the diary of a drunk guy.
Right. Yeah. But it's so, but you know, it's, I bring it up because it's that idea of like some things have, need digestion.
For sure.
Some things need digestion and, you know, like. Black Mirror is like that. Mm-hmm. Like, you should stop and sit with it for a little while before you dive right back into some other thing.
Yeah, agreed.
Although there are other things that aren't like that. Like, I love Love, Death, and Robots. Season 2 just came out, and me and Janine are going to do an episode on it. And we did an episode on Season 1. Check this feed. And I don't know, maybe because they're short, I have no problem.
Maybe. The hour long, I find, makes a big difference.
Yeah, it does make a big difference, for sure. All right, give me another one off your list.
Okay, so
please.
my next one is a cheat. It's really it's a big genre.
Motherfucker.
But we talked about it. It's something that we just talked about before.
What?
Which is, so I have sitcoms from the 1950s to the 1980s.
Holy shit. You were cheating at this podcast.
And here's, I'm a cheater. Here's why. Because, and I put notes next to everyone. I wrote pre-season arcs. These can be fun, but seasons are super long, so are most episodes. Their repetition and continuity errors will become very apparent very quickly.
See, I disagree.
And I put Mary Tyler Moore as an example. We did a podcast last year where I told you I was binging Mary Tyler Moore, and it started driving me nuts that it was so formulaic and that a bunch of continuity errors kept popping up episode to episode because they just simply were not meant to be watched like that.
Right.
And I just felt like it was not enjoyable. It stopped being enjoyable for me.
I disagree. Going back to what I said before about the Goldbergs, there's something about the fact that it's so formulaic that I almost feel it's like music in a way or something. Like, I feel comfortable with it.
Don't you get bored?
I mean, sure, you can.
I felt myself getting bored. And I was like, I feel like if I were watching this one episode a week the way it was intended, I'd be like, oh, this is a great show. But now I'm getting bored by it.
It's also different when you think about really old stuff, because before the advent of like rerunning a whole season, like there'd be like sometimes like 40 fucking episodes.
Well, that's
like,
it was insane. It was super long. I remember being like, oh my God, I've watched a million episodes. I'm still on season
one. They were also longer shows because there was less commercials.
Because there were fewer commercials. Yeah. And I remember the continuity errors, like two examples. Like, you know, there's the classic one. Remember Nick at Night used to do those continuity error commercials?
Yeah.
The one from The Odd Couple where it's like there was an episode about them meeting in the army. And then it's like literally in the intro, it says they were childhood friends.
Yeah.
So that's one, because they didn't care about shit like that back then. And then like Mary Tyler Moore, like the pilot is a great pilot. She moves to the city and she gets a job working with these people. Like literally the third episode, she's offered a job elsewhere. And she's like, I don't know if I could leave the gang. We're like family. And I was like, no, you're not. You just got you there just two episodes ago. People. But I guess if you're watching in real time, it'd been a little while. And that's the situation of the comedy. So you just, you, back then you would just take it as.
They don't expect you to remember the anything. Surface.
They didn't because it was, and there were no season arcs really.
Right, right. Because remember, this is even before, it's not just before streaming. Like, this is before like VHS. And, you know what I mean? Like, they really were not expecting you to, you know, be following along in some way.
Right. And I could just think of a bunch of other examples. I've tried to watch, I've tried to binge on The Family. Can't do it. I've tried, like, I feel like a lot of shows from, like, the one exception I feel like is, like, The Honeymooners. Because it is, I'm used to watching that in marathon format. And, like, I Love Lucy, same.
But the thing about,
but, like, others, like, 60s, 70s, 80s sitcoms, a lot of them I just find I cannot do it.
I love The Honeymooners, and I love binging The Honeymooners on New Year's Eve. But I have to say that because it's every act is in one set, and there's rarely another set, after a while, I just feel like I'm looking at the same living room for so long.
Yeah.
And that's what bugs me out about older shows like I Love Lucy and Honeymooners. Especially Honeymooners. I've talked about this before on the podcast. People don't talk about how like inherently drab and depressing it actually is.
Oh, yeah, because they're supposed to have such hard lives.
Right, so it's like you're looking at the same slum. This is how you're starting your new year. You're looking at the same these miserable people in a slum.
Or you flip over to the Twilight Zone and you start thinking about your existence. It's not...
And they're both black and white shows. There's got to be some dissertation somewhere on why they aren't, why they seem to have clicked so much with us in terms of the new year.
Well, that's the thing, and this goes back to the point I made earlier, or a question I asked you earlier about binging, which is, do you consider binging to be like when you can't take your eyes off the screen, or do you consider binging to be I'm going to have this playing constantly in the background while I'm on my phone, while I'm cleaning, while I'm doing whatever? Is that binging?
I wouldn't make the distinction. I'd call, if I'm watching them one after another, I would call that form of consumption binging. But I do think there is a difference between, and it, for me, it's typically of, the difference is typically if I'm watching it for the first time or if I'm revisiting it. If I'm revisiting it and it's like a warm blanket, it's just like, okay, it's just on. It's just like, you know what I mean? Like, I've just got it on.
Yeah.
Like last year I had shingles. Which is still funny to me because who gets shingles?
Right before the pandemic, too, you got shingles.
No, it was during the pandemic. Yeah. Wow. It was during the pandemic. And for like the 2 weeks that I was in immense pain, I binged all of New Girl again.
But you had watched it already.
It's one of those shows like I binged it, but it was still on. And then I finished it.
I introduced it to you when it was still on.
Right. And then I binged it. But anyway, it was kind of like I'm in pain. I've got this serious illness. I can't. My brain doesn't want to play a video game. My brain doesn't want to look at a movie. I just need something that is familiar and kind of funny, but also won't challenge me at all. So New Girl was like the perfect prescription for my illness.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. But I feel like when it's a first watch, if I'm drawn to my phone a whole lot, then it's like, then why am I doing this?
Right, because it's like, slow yourself down and enjoy it.
That's what I felt like. I feel like that happens to me often when I try to watch older sitcoms.
Yeah, I think, going back to the model, like, I think those things are not meant to be binged.
Not at all. Right.
And they're also just slower. Like, when more commercials crept into TV shows, they got better at like cutting out superfluous,
they got punchier, yeah,
shit. And it's like you watch like an old like Columbo, and it's like 10 seconds of Columbo walking up the driveway to the house. And it's like on an episode of like Bones or Law and Order Now, like you wouldn't have that.
Right. It would just cut right to him being
like there's no fucking establishing shot. Like, it's just so languid.
Establishing shots in TV shows now are like one split second.
Right. It's like we're here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean that, you know, you have to think about the interior rhythm of the editing too. You know, like if it's not like New Girl is and 30 Rock, right? I think are super punchy, in both its editing and its dialogue. So that makes them bingeable. Yes. Even though I think you maybe could make the argument that 30 Rock, you need to pay more attention to it. Mm-hmm. But certainly 30 Rock, after I've already seen it, is easily bingeable for me. Mm-hmm. Okay. What so all now? Sitcoms ever.
Yes.
Great. Let me say Stranger Things.
Okay.
Which I just brought up as one of the first things that people really thought of as like a super popular bingeable show. Hour longs are harder to binge mm-hmm. than half hours. And I love genre, but, you know, I think, I don't know, I think you need to make more of a meal out of it. You know, sometimes I think also, like, the narrative story here is taking place over 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So you are spending less time in this world than they are, in a way. That's, it's like, between episode one and episode two, 4 days have passed. But for you, 4 seconds have passed. Right. And maybe you should let a little room there.
Right, because you got to think about, like, when they're writing it and planning it, they're thinking, like, okay, like, you know, this is episode one, and then a week has passed, and then this is where the characters are a week later. And they're not, maybe they're not even thinking about the fact that somebody's going to be watching it right away, yeah. right after.
I think about that all the time now when I watch new shows, because I think, like, when you see, like, they'll be like, last time on, and it's like, I think, like, do they just do this for the tradition of the show? Do they think at one point this might actually go from Netflix to cable? Like, I think about, like, do TV writers for shows that are put out in the binge model, do they actually, like, think of it the way people used to think of TV shows?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Stranger Things.
And then, and also, are you a big fan of Stranger Things?
Not a big fan.
Yeah, no. Me neither.
But I am a medium fan. I think it's a good show. I do think it's a good show. I think it's funny. I think it's lively. I think it's, I really like the monsters. I think it is a good show. I just, I think being super obsessed with it is a young man's game, because I think it's so self-reflexive.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to not use the word postmodern.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to not use the word postmodern. It's so self-reflexive in terms of, it's so intertextual in mm-hmm. terms of referring to other things, that I think if you're an old hand like me and you have seen all those other things, it's less rewarding. I think if you're a young kid, you're like, ooh, I think that's a reference to Jaws or whatever. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm like, yeah, it's Jaws. All right, move on.
Can I ask a related question that's unrelated, but just based on what you just said? I just thought of it. Do you think that we're still in the postmodern era? Because I was just thinking the other day, I'll bet that, like, the Trump era and the pandemic are going to be the beginnings of whatever's next.
It's so hard to even define.
It's all in hindsight, too. Yeah. But I do feel like a cultural shift has happened.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean, things are certainly self-reflexive. Things are certainly intertextual.
I feel like earnestness is coming back.
That's for sure. But I think in terms of media culture, like, you would never have something like the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the past. Like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is a perfect testament to, they expect you to have this knowledge, they expect you to understand things. Like, a lot of people like that first Spider-Man that came out with Tom Holland, because it's not an origin.
Right.
They just, you know, fucking Spider-Man. Like, right. That's it. Like, there's no spider biting him. Right. There's no Uncle Ben dying. They're just like, you get it. You know what Spider-Man is. Let's just go. And I think that, you know, you've got also the you know, nerd culture, and you've got streaming, and because of streaming, you also have a wider media literacy.
Mm.
Like, people know a lot of stuff now. People watch a lot of stuff. People, you know, really can dig into things and rewatch things.
For sure.
So, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to answer that, because postmodern can mean so many things. Like, I just watched an interview with Susan Sontag from 20 years ago, and she's talking about how, like, she doesn't like the term postmodern because it really doesn't have a concrete meaning in anything but architecture. Mm-hmm.
Well, most of these things are always these things I feel like are always better defined or clearer in the rear view.
I mean,
and also every literary movement, artistic movement, whatever, there's always, like, it contributes to the next one. There's always holdovers, too. So it's never, like, linear and clear. But I do feel like, as far as culture, I don't know. I was just thinking about this the other day. Like, I feel like these last 4 years have been just so monumental in shifting the culture.
Yeah. Well,
that I wouldn't be surprised if, like, in a textbook in 100 years, they said, like, okay, this this is the beginning of a new period.
Right, right. It takes 100 years.
Yeah, exactly.
See, I always think of postmodern in terms of Frederick Jameson, who wrote Postmodernism, The Cultural Logic of Late Capitalism.
Yeah, Freddie.
So, to me, I'm always...
he was wild.
Yeah. To me, I'm always... I always think of it in terms of capitalism, mm-hmm. and capitalism, we still have it, but we still are in the late stages, and it does get faster and more reckless.
And it's being challenged more now than it ever has in the last 100 years.
So I suppose we are still in it in a way.
Interesting.
But, you know, even modernism is hard to define.
It is. Like, it's super hard to define.
The difference between modernism and postmodernism, I think, is itself a difficult thing to grasp.
It is, because I feel like, and I'm coming at this from, like, the world of literature, and I could be totally off, but I feel like in some ways modernism and postmodernism are a lot about looking back. So that makes them harder to define. Or harder to teach or put your thumb, like thumb them or pin them down or whatever with your thumb or whatever that fucking expression is. You know what I mean? Like, because it's a lot about like considering where you are now versus where you came from. Whereas I feel like a lot of past eras were all about like, this is of the moment.
I think it's because information technology has advanced to the point where we can retain so much information now, and we have for so long that a young person now has at their fingertips an insane amount of information, and that will make them have a much more intertextual way of understanding the world and have just a different logic.
Right. But historically speaking, there's usually some big cultural event that kicks off a new period. So like modernism was started like arguably by like World War II, Great Depression, World War II, depending on who you ask, Roaring 20s into the Great Depression into World War II kicked it off, but or I've maybe a little bit later. See, it also depends on some theorists and scholars have different definitions of when it starts and ends.
I was going to say, the modern period, I've seen, often they'll say like it's World War I, but I've seen it as far back as like 1865 with like some of Freud's work.
Yeah.
Some people say it's the airplane. Some people say it's the bomb. Yeah. So
every period's like that. You can have depending on what you read or who you ask, you can have a difference of like 50 years.
Right.
You know?
Right. Because basically with modernism, it's like, what do you think the thing is that defined modernity?
Right. And it's like historians, I know they like to talk about the slow 19th and the fast 20th centuries.
Right.
Or maybe it's the slow 18th and the fast 19th century or something.
I mean,
where it's like...
it all gets faster and faster.
Yeah, faster and faster, right. But anyway, we're off track. But my next one is controversial.
Oh boy.
Because this is one that I do watch. I have in the background a lot because it's arguably my favorite show. But
okay,
I think that 30 Rock... I have 30 Rock and other absurdist comedy shows.
Whoa.
Like Arrested Development.
Yeah.
Are very... I wouldn't recommend binging them on a first watch. And I did not binge 30 Rock. I watched it in real time.
Yes.
And here's why. Because I've since watched a lot of episodes in a row. And I found that it leads to... I have here semantic satiation.
Whoa.
Which is, you know what that is?
No, what is it?
When you say a word over and over again and it loses meaning.
Okay.
Okay, that's the analogy I thought of. 30 Rock is so absurd and so fast and so ridiculous.
Yes.
That I feel like I have here, absurdity becomes de rigueur very quickly. Like, it's so absurd that if you watch too much of it in a row, the absurdity almost feels common.
Interesting.
And I have jokes get lost because of how fast it is.
Right.
So that's my thinking.
I agree with that.
I'm coming to this one as someone who did not binge it the first time.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't recommend to somebody who wants to try out 30 Rock binging it, because I think that they would get like, I don't know. It comes in like a whirlwind, I feel like.
You get numb to it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. And I feel like it's almost like ridiculous.
It's dizzying.
On top of ridiculous.
It's dizzying.
It's like a hat on top of a hat. It gets very... Arrested Development's the same way.
Arrested Development is on my list.
Yeah, it gets very like things that would make you laugh out loud yesterday.
Yeah.
Now, because you've just watched 10 episodes of it, are like, huh.
Right.
You don't get the same joy that you would if you took your time with it.
Right. Maybe the reason why they are bingeable after the first watch is because you are familiar, yes. So you don't have to pay so close attention.
And you can tune in and out, and there's always going to be something funny because 30 Rock has a joke every 10 seconds.
Right. That's a 30 Rock, even more than Arrested Development, is such a – it's so joke dense.
There's – I mean – The formula of 30 Rock is like there's basically like two jokes per page, it seems like.
It's crazy. At least. It's crazy. And Arrested Development is very fast, but it's also very everything builds. So like yes. It's just – so like it's a
every
lot of
every joke
like,
in Arrested Development is a repetitive joke.
Right, right.
Her so, and like all those right, jokes so are it, just the same thing over and over and over again.
Right, exactly. So it's like it's like this long – it's like following these long strands for a long time. Even like – The picture of is it Pete Rose sliding in the baseball yeah, like yeah. Like that and you kind of expect it but it's like it's you get numb to it yeah
that's I feel and again this is no shade to 30 Rock I love 30 Rock it's arguably my favorite show but I just think that it's something that should be savored.
I wonder if those comedies are written that way at that because they're kind of contemporary. If they're written that way as a way to break through to the audience, like imploring you to watch them closely.
I don't know. I mean, when 30 Rock was on, it always enjoyed very low ratings.
Right. It always got its ass kicked by Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
And of course, Arrested Development.
Was canceled, yeah.
Floundered its whole existence.
Yeah, both of those shows were critical darlings that nobody watched when they were on.
Right, right, right.
So.
Yeah, interesting. So Arrested Development is on mine. And I could say I have the experience of binging Arrested Development and almost like getting sick. Like, I was like in the middle of one episode and I was like, I don't know. It was that thing where it was like, I don't know if I just started episode 2 minutes ago or if I'm towards the end of an episode. Right. I've just been watching this for so long, my head hurts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm sick of Ron Howard's voice.
It all starts to just feel like too much.
Yeah. The analogy I wrote down this week when I was thinking about this was, sometimes binging a show is like eating a big stack of pancakes. Where, like, at first it's delicious and it's hot and it's syrupy. But then after a while, it's, like, cold and it's, like, it's all very samey.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is still just pancakes.
Yeah. Or chocolate ice cream.
Like, it goes from awesome to, ugh, I don't want it really quickly. And you're like, I got to turn this off.
Yeah. I'm watching Arrested Development again now, but I'm watching it one or two episodes a night and enjoying it much. Like I'm enjoying it a lot, and that's the way I originally watched it, except for season 4, which I binged and didn't like.
Well, let me segue into my next one because I feel like it follows in this conversation. Schitt's Creek. I'm not saying anything bad about
disagree.
The show. You think that's a bingeable?
Yeah,
show?
Yeah, see, I binged that and I loved it, I feel like that show lends itself to being binged.
I binged it and I found binging of it. See, if you watch it in a more like singular way, I feel like I'm enjoying a little adventure with the Rose family. But when I was watching it binging, I found like I was too attuned to the overall story. Like I remember season one thinking like, what are they gonna do? Are they gonna get their money back? Like I wasn't enjoying the moments of what the show was. I don't know what we can call this phenomenon, but when you binge a show, you are more in tune to the arc.
Yes, for sure you are.
And I found that
and you even,
unpleasant about Schitt's Creek.
You're even in tune to like when you'll be like, oh, this particular episode's picking the arc back up.
That's two episodes ago was that.
Right, right.
So it's like it yeah.
See, I just love a lot of people have been making this comparison lately, so it's a little trite, but Schitt's Creek is like the sweeter version of Arrested Development in that they're like a rich family that lost all their money and whatever, but they actually care about it. They grow to really care about each other, whatever. And I just found, I think that there's something to its heart that makes it very pleasant to watch in a marathon.
See, I watched, I think, the first three seasons binge, and I actually haven't finished a show, and I know everyone says it's the best show ever. You should really finish it.
I don't want to say it gets better because I do think it's good from the very beginning, but I do think like most shows, the first season is the weakest.
I think I turned myself off of
it. It's very slow in the beginning.
It is slow in the beginning. I don't know. I think I turned myself off of it. Not that I think it's a bad show, but I think binging it, I don't know, it something...
I feel that way about book series too. Like sometimes I'm not into book series like Harry Potter. I still never read the seventh one because I read the first six in a row. I mean, I read them when I was a kid, and then when I was an adult, I was like, I'm going to reread all of them. And I read the first six, and then I was like, motherfucker, if I have to read one more page, I will kill myself.
Those freaks, the Gagliardis, read them over and over and over again.
No, I know they do. Our dad read The Lord of the Rings over and over and over again.
Yeah, but I think that's so dense that it's and it's also like that's like one book that they broke up into three.
Well, I think they're reading it to their children, aren't they?
Well, now they are, but I mean, they read it over and over again.
I don't know.
Luckily, they won't hear this.
Part of me thinks like I'm saving the seventh for the one day. Although now, who knows? He'll never get there.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, the creator has left a bit of a rotten taste in your mouth.
I feel so bad for all those queer people who have Harry Potter tattoos who are like getting them removed.
Well, I think this is a beautiful time for us to revisit the death of the author because I think a lot of people are like, hey, you know, fuck you. It's ours, not yours.
Yeah, people seem split on it.
You know, like you shouldn't. If it did help you and it helped you in your queerness and it helped you feel seen in this world, then fuck it. She's wrong. It's yours.
But that's the thing.
She's going to die and the book's going to still
remain. Of course. And I'm so into new criticism and it's you know, what's on the page, not the authorial intent and all that stuff. But I do think it's just such a slap in the face because it's not just she said problematic things and people are turned off to her. It's she said problematic things about the very community that was the first to embrace her books.
Yeah, I know.
And that saw themselves in her books.
It's like if Judy Garland were like, I don't like gay people.
Which she probably did say behind closed doors. But you know what? God bless her.
Not Judy. If the movie Judy, when Renee Zellweger has taught me anything, she loved gay people and would go over the dinner in the house.
I
can't think of another analog. Like sometimes I think like, well, people turned on George Lucas, but that's just because he became sort of like a corporate pig. He didn't become problematic to the point where he was like,
no, I feel like George, I'm gonna defend George Lucas for a second.
I like George Lucas.
I think he's a good person. Yeah. And I love, do you know, I mean, as a teacher, Edutopia is a great resource and that's his life's work now.
Yeah, I know. He's very philanthropic.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of an analog to J.K. Rowling and I can't think of one. I mean, maybe I know that Anne Rice like switched religions a bunch of times. Maybe that turned off some of her fans.
Not really.
But she eventually came back to
the dark side.
Yeah. Right? I think she came back to atheism.
Now she's I don't know what I think now she's just spiritual or whatever. But even when she was a Christian, she was still writing interesting books.
Right. Yeah. I can't think of anyone else like J.K. Rowling. Yeah,
no, neither can I. Where it's like specifically the marginalized community that embraced her the most is the one that she like insulted the most.
Fucking J.K. Fucking Rowling.
All right.
Yeah.
Who's up? Am I up?
Yeah, I think so. Well, how many do you have left?
Two.
I have two left as well.
Okay.
Oh, no, wait. I have one left, so you should go.
Okay. So this next one I think is an amazing show.
Caveat time.
But, okay. So here we go. Breaking Bad. Okay. This is the one where I saw a decent amount of articles that said that like Breaking Bad came out like at just the right time where like for a lot of people, Breaking Bad was the first show they ever binged.
Interesting.
And that it's like the epitome of a bingeable show is Breaking Bad. Now, here's the thing. I came really late to the game, and I watched it last year.
Yeah.
And I watched it one episode a night. I didn't binge
it.
And even at one episode a night, I felt like I was watching it too fast.
Why?
And here's why. The change in Walter is gradual.
Mm-hmm.
But when you binge it or when you watch too fast, something is lost. It begins to feel completely ludicrous.
Yeah.
And there's lots, you notice that there's lots and lots of Deus Ex Machina moments and it all starts to collapse. Wow. And then I walked away from that show feeling like Walter is clearly the villain, which maybe you're supposed to.
I think you're supposed to.
But to add another interesting layer to this, Breaking Bad itself is supposed to only take place over like a year.
Oh, okay.
So it is weird because it's like not. It doesn't make sense that all this would happen so quickly. Yeah. And when you watch it quickly, I feel like you start to see the hand of the artist, so to speak, and sure. you start to see, like, this is, a lot of this is, like, just timing and coincidence and ridiculous, and how did so many people not know, and his brother-in-law is supposed to be, like, this amazing narc, and he doesn't know the whole time, yeah. and, like, I don't know, it just, I felt like I watched it too fast, and that was one a night, so I feel like if I binged it, I'd really be, like, not like it,
I yeah. guess. Well, I'm embarrassed. You've caught me a bit with my pants down, sir, because I haven't watched Breaking Bad.
You're one of the only people left. I was one of the only people
Please
left.
Don't unsubscribe.
It's a great show.
I'm sure. I started to watch it, and the first three episodes aren't good. So, and everyone says, wait till episode 4 or 5, and I'm like, something in my life happened. And this yeah. is just how it is sometimes. Something in my life happened that I for some reason I turned away from it. I didn't watch it. I think I will go back eventually. But part of me also is, I haven't seen The Wire either. I'm sorry. Part of me also feels like, how do I now approach a show that people tell me is the greatest show of all time?
Well, The Wire, I saw on somebody else's list as shows you shouldn't binge. It was on a couple of them.
Yeah.
So for me, I chose Breaking Bad because I feel like it just doesn't serve, the story to watch it quickly, because I think you're supposed to, it's supposed to be gradual. It's supposed to be season to season. Walter's getting darker and darker.
Did you watch Mad Men?
Mad Men is my number one. That's my, on my list.
Okay. I'm sorry.
You just fucking spoiled the whole thing.
Fuck me. Cause I always think of Breaking Bad, Mad Men, and Sopranos. Sopranos, this isn't on my list, but I would add it. Sopranos, too, I'd say is very hard to binge. And this is a show I also didn't finish. I binged the first three seasons, and then I got, like, I can't live in this dark world anymore.
Well,
because Sopranos, even though there's a lot of comedy, Sopranos is more funny than people think. It's almost like Shakespearean, because some of the characters are so ridiculous in the way that they talk. Mm. But Sopranos is also so gloom, and it's really about the fucking devil and how horrible he is, and he's trying to find peace, but there's no way therapy is going to help him because he's the fucking devil. Mm-hmm. So at a certain point, Sopranos is like, oh, mm-hmm. it's like a black cloud over my fucking head.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't, but I'm sure some people, I'm sure if you've seen Sopranos, it would be easy to binge it. But I tried to binge it, and I got three seasons in, and I was like, I got to step away from this.
I'm going to say something, and maybe I'm going to offend a whole lot of people.
Oh, geez.
Do you find that's a lot of this? We did another episode like this. Do you find that a lot of Sopranos fans like it for the wrong reasons?
I think we did. We definitely did.
Did we talk about Sopranos specifically?
We did an episode about bad fandom. Or fandoms that
miss the point.
The texts are good, but the fans turn you off.
For me, I think Sopranos, if I didn't mention it on that episode, it goes right with that.
Yeah, I think some people,
they're like, oh, Tony's great. It's like, no, Tony is not.
He's
great.
The devil. Yeah, I think, I mean, going
James
back to
James Gandolfini is a great actor.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make Tony great.
Yeah, going back to, like, you know, The Godfather or whatever, like, I think there's always some razzle-dazzle to watching characters who live in organized crime and the things they get away with, and, it you know, there are power fantasies there. So, yeah, I think people do read it the way. But those are the people that also, as the show got on, they became more frustrated, because I think the show gets less fun and becomes darker.
Those are the people who are like, the finale was fucking bullshit.
Right, which I think the finale is great.
Yeah.
Well, I missed the middle. See, I watched the first three seasons, and then I watched the last season while it was on.
Yeah.
So I missed a big chunk in the middle.
Yeah, people who are like, I watched this show for 10 years for this. It just ends.
Right, and it's right. Like, yeah, of course it just... you know what? It's a grace that it ends that way, that he just dies without knowing.
Right.
And by the way, I don't really think it's up for debate.
You think... Really? I didn't read it like that.
I
read it as, because you're waiting, it's just supposed to show that he's always going to live the rest of his life waiting to die until it does happen. But I don't think it happened in that moment.
I think the creator has said it happened in that moment.
Really?
I might be wrong, but also,
is that Cut to Black supposed to represent the way
he's
die?
Dead. He's gone. Well, you know, look, I always say Death of the Author. It doesn't matter. You can read it however you want it, and your reading, I'm sure, is good as well.
Well, because it's so anticlimactic that it almost feels like, oh, this is supposed to show us the tension he always feels.
Well, you got
to
remember, earlier on in the season, they're having a drunk conversation where they're saying, what do you think it's like to die? And Tony says, I think it's just black. I think it just ends. Which well, is a big moment for a character clear. That's supposed to be Catholic to realize that it's just over.
Right.
Yeah. I always saw a little ambiguity in it. There's also like people have broken it down like it's a Zapruder film, but if you people have gone online and been like there's a shifty character in the
diner,
in the diner with them who's like looking at them.
Yeah.
And people are like, that guy's the hitman. Mm-hmm. And but it's also an interesting thing of you don't know exactly what he's being killed for. It's just some comeuppance for something he did at some point because he's the devil.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have one left.
Okay, go ahead. Well, you've already spoiled mine, but I'll talk about it more in depth
when we get there. Sorry, folks. Twin Peaks.
I've never watched Twin Peaks.
Okay. Twin Peaks is...
I know you're a big fan of
Twin Peaks. I love Twin Peaks. Love Twin Peaks. And Twin Peaks is something that I did binge and then had to slow myself down, but I did finish it. It's so hard to describe Twin Peaks, but if I had to describe it, I'd say that it works on two levels. On a narrative level, it's a mystery, a whodunit mystery of who killed Laura Palmer, the I want to say main girl, but she's not the main girl. She's the show that is all about her, and then the actress comes in later on to play her identical cousin. It gets weird. But then there's this other level where it's surrealism. And surrealism invites the viewer to analyze what they're viewing. So the whodunit of the narrative, and then on top of that, a level of surrealism, like, why did that just happen? Why is that like that? Why did we just cut to a scene of two people we've never seen before having a weird conversation, and then we'd never see them again? Was that meant to symbolize something? So those two things together makes the audience completely fascinated with it, especially season three, which came 20 years later.
How many seasons are there? Three. Okay.
There was two originally.
I can't believe that was on primetime TV.
That's what's wild to me. It's crazy that it was. There was two originally, and those have more humor. It's more of like a pastiche of soap operas.
Well, that's what I was... From what I understand, it's a very weird show that was sort of like a take on like Peyton Place, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But setting it in an unconventional setting for a soap
opera. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And then season three came up. After the first two seasons, there was a movie, which a lot of people hated.
Fire Walk With Me.
Right, because the movie was super violent, super dark, and also very scary. It's almost like a horror movie. There's none of the humor of the shows in it. And then...
Is it the same actors?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Except for one actor refused to be in it because of a scene that he didn't want to do. The guy who played Ben Horn, who is he's like the rich asshole of the community who like runs everything.
So did they replace him or did just leave?
He's
the character
just not
out?
In it. Okay. He's just because the movie's a prequel. The movie is about the last week in the life of Laura Palmer. Okay. So and it ends in her murder, which is pretty wild. And then season three came like 20 years later. Season three was only on a couple years ago. It was on Showtime, and you know David Lynch's was at the height of his powers, and every episode is full of just insanity. I mean, episode 8 is in the middle, and it's a black and white episode that takes place in the 50s. And some people see it as like this is a prequel, like this is supposed to be the birth of evil, because it's supposed to be when this it's so many fucking layers to it. like if you believe in the lore or whatever of the show, or like not the lore of the show, but what. There is a sort of school of popular theorizing that a lot of the fans agree with. Mm-hmm. That it's not in the text, but it's part of the community of watching the show. Through context clues and various other things, people believe that the first use of a nuclear weapon in the world, that's where evil was released.
Okay.
And...
As someone who's never watched a show, this is wild.
It's bananas because it's a who, like to spoil Twin Peaks, it's a whodunit. And then at the end of season one, you find out it was the girl's father. But then you find out it wasn't. It was the girl's father possessed by a demon. So it's supernatural.
I never knew there was a supernatural element to
it. Yeah, it's okay. Very supernatural. So anyway, it's a great show. It's just too dense.
Okay.
Just watching it, even the original show, which is lighter. It's just too fucking dense. And
where is it streaming?
It used to be on Netflix. I don't know if it still is. And I know that if you get into it, you're going to want to binge it, especially because you're going to want to get to the mystery element keeps you coming back, like you want to see more clues and stuff. Mm-hmm. But eventually, it's going to thwart you. Like, there could be episodes where there's none of the mystery going on. Because the main character, Agent Cooper, is an agent of the FBI, and he comes to Twin Peaks to investigate Laura Palmer's murder. But then he just stays. And, like, he's just part of the town. And there are episodes, and then, like, aliens. It's fucking, it's one of the weirdest, best shows of all time. But it's just, you gotta force yourself to take some time with it.
Okay.
That's my last one.
Oh, wow. And it's, okay. All right. So, my last one is Mad Men. So.
What a surprise.
So, I have, and this is, I've attempted to watch the show many times. I've never made it through Mad Men.
I've never watched a single moment of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I've watched a few seasons. It is so depressing and so slow. I wrote, the show works against its audience.
Wow.
But I think it's meant to.
Sure, probably.
And it's often referred to as the show where nothing happens. Because when you...
I thought that was Seinfeld.
No, that's the show about nothing. Wow. The show that nothing happens because it is such a slow boil that it's okay. Like... But like a slow boil. And the main character, spoilers, whatever, the main character like isn't even who you think he is. Right, and you find that out way later. It's all this like 1950s suburban American malaise. Like, I wrote that I started to feel like it almost felt like after a while, like an imitation of itself. Huh. Because it just felt like so slow. And when you watch it when you try to binge it, it's just like every episode feels like it takes a year to get through.
I think The Sopranos started to feel like an imitation
and then
of itself.
Just starts to feel like, I just felt like, I was like, I cannot take
this. So for those people it's just who are a huge horrible, fans of it, what do you think that they
I because get it's out extremely it. Well written and well acted and it's good. And maybe if I'd watched it week to week, I probably would have really liked it a lot. But I just find that it's so sad. Like everyone in that show is a miserable alcoholic.
Okay.
And it's all about like the facade of like suburban America and ad men on Madison Avenue.
Right. And ad men,
creating the Americana of the time period that's all about like, the 50s American ideal. Right.
So they're creating the bullshit.
Right. But they're all miserable.
Right.
And a lot of them are scarred from the war and whatever. And it's just like, I don't know. It's just, I find it really, and maybe this is just me because I know a lot of people do binge watch it. I find it really, really, really hard to binge. And I found it hard to get through because I was just like, I don't like any of these characters. Like the only character I kind of liked is Peggy and that's it. Right. And even she, like, the show didn't end the way I wanted it to with her. I watched the last few episodes, and I really, I wanted him to die, and I wanted Peggy to, like, take over. But that, like, didn't really happen, so.
Yeah.
And it ended, like, with a weird, like, transition into to the counterculture, I guess, or, like, the next.
Right.
He's, like, meditating, the and then he thinks of the idea of, like,
the Coke ad.
I'd like to share the...
Right, yeah. He realizes I can
market this.
I can market the hippie boom.
Right, exactly.
So basically, and I've only seen the last episode.
Yeah.
Or the end of the last episode.
Yeah.
He gets a moment of clarity and peace, and he immediately realizes that I can sell it.
Yeah, and then you see that ad, which was like a huge ad. Right. And then, I don't know, there's also like, there's just like so many, people are so cruel to each other, and there's so much, there's like, it's all like repression on top of repression, and closeted gay people, and people, it's just, it's tough, man.
Well, I totally get it. I think that's why I haven't watched it. I also haven't watched any of Handmaid's Tale, and I just know that there's a lot of rape. And I can't. Someone gave me the Handmaid's Tale book, and they were like, "You like science fiction? This is one of the best books ever." And I read like a paragraph, and I was like, "I don't want to enter this world."
Yeah. See, no, I've read the Handmaid's Tale. I do think it's an amazing novel, and I teach it. And I have some of my students reading it now and they really like it. But the show is interesting because the show, like basically the novel's the first season and then it builds from there. And now it seems like, I haven't watched it either, but based on the ads I'm seeing, it seems like it's picking up in a way where like the handmaids are rebelling or escaping or something.
Yeah, Jen watches it and it's a new season going on, and they've a lot of spoiler alerts for Handmaid's Tale. A lot of them have like snuck into Canada where they don't have those laws.
Well, the thing about The Handmaid's Tale that's interesting is that even in the world of the novel, I don't know if this is the same for the show because I haven't watched the show, but in the world of the novel, the phenomenon of what's going on in The Handmaid's Tale is specific to America. Yeah. And there's even a part where the two handmaids are walking down the street and there are like Asian tourists taking photos of them, yeah, like the way you take photos of the Amish.
Yeah.
And it's like people come to America to see the way we live. It's like, it's not the whole world, right? So, and then also spoiler alert for the book, Margaret Atwood included in the original novel, it's part of it, there's an epilogue, uh-huh, which takes place like 100 years in the future, uh-huh, where it's a college class being taught about that era. So you know at the end that era eventually ends. Hmm. And the college professor was talking about how it started and how it ended.
Interesting.
And it was just like a blip in time. So I wouldn't be surprised if the show gets us to where the society crumbles.
From what I just hear from Jen, it sounds like where it's going is there's actually going to be a world war between other countries and America.
Well, because
which the Handmaids will be involved in some way.
Right. I mean, I think The Handmaid's Tale, the I can only speak for the book, is an amazing book.
I've also
never read the sequel, and I don't know if the sequel has anything to do with the show.
The sequel just came out.
It just came out, like, and I don't know if it follows the show either.
I have no idea.
But it's called The Testaments. I haven't read it.
But
I get what you're saying. Binging Handmaid's Tale is another show that probably if you binge it, you're like, wow, it's a lot of rape and a lot of graphic.
I don't want to watch it.
It's also
it
very
at all.
Violent.
I don't want to watch it at all. Yeah, I just, you
well,
know.
Also during, you know, not to get political, but like I know a lot of people were very triggered during like the Trump era.
Right. Which is also what made it, I think, also so prescient.
And I mean, year after year at the Women's March, women come dressed as handmaids and stuff.
And she wrote that book so long ago.
I know.
Probably thinking like, oh, well, this chestnut won't, this won't be super relevant in the future.
I know. How sad is that?
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah, it was written in the 80s. There's actually an old 80s Handmaid's Tale movie.
Is there really?
Yes. That is not that great.
I'm sure
it is. But it's a standalone movie that came out in like 1986.
Wow. And it was, I had no idea.
Yeah, you I think you can watch it on YouTube.
For some reason, I'm imagining Karen Black in it.
It's someone. I feel like it's someone like that.
It's
hold
gotta
on.
Be
Let me
Karen
pull it up.
Black.
Let me pull it up. Handmaid's Tale movie. I don't think it did very well either.
I've never fucking heard of it.
Faye Dunaway is in it, though.
So close to Karen Black. Karen Black is the dime store Faye Dunaway.
Yeah, it was Natasha Richardson.
Okay.
As the main character, the show is June, but she's not named in the movie or the book. And Faye Dunaway is Serena Joy, and Robert Duvall is the commander.
Interesting.
And this is this is like a still from it.
Oh. Interesting. I had no fucking
idea. It looks like they're trying to sell it as sexy, right?
I know. I had no idea.
Yep.
Wow. I wonder if they calmed it down.
Yeah, look, the forgotten film adaptation from the 80s.
I bet it's not as brutal as the book.
It's actually from 1990.
It might be brutal.
It's sort of brutal. It is. I watched it. It's sort of brutal. But it's not as the show probably is.
Wow. Well, we did it.
I think we did it.
Anthony, I love when you come on. The listeners love when you come on because you are an intellectual man. You're not like these other boobs that I have on. The nerds love you, and so do I. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank
we
you
end
for
every
me.
Episode by saying
go bye-bye.